to be here. So I want to talk about some work I did with Yang Bai, who has been a couple of times here recently, and also Marcela Carena. They're both at Fermilab, and some follow-up work with Human Dabudiaso, who is at Brookhaven. And so I want to basically, if you like, revisit some ideas that have been explored in the past in the context of an extra-dimensional scenario. And so this will be a talk about strong dynamics. As a way of introduction, let me just ask two questions that one would be very nice to answer in regards to electroweak symmetry breaking. One of them is if there is a dynamical mechanism that maybe inevitably leads to the breaking of the electroweak symmetry. And second, if you have that, then you can ask how the electroweak scale itself arises, and maybe also how that scale is associated to other scales that we know about, such as the Planck scale. And so the idea that the electroweak scale may be broken by strong dynamics is actually very appealing, and it provides a compelling answer to these questions. So the prototypical example is the case of new QCD-like interactions, such as Technicolor kind of theories, where so you have some set of fermions that have some strong interactions. If those interactions are such that a condensate of the fermions form, and if these fermions have the appropriate quantum numbers under the standard model gauge group, then you will break the electroweak symmetry. So these will be models where there is no Higgs, but you still break the symmetry. And basically, you can, through the magic of a dimensional transmutation, one can generate these condensation scale and easily understand how it is, for instance, much lower than a high scale. So something similar to what happens in QCD. And so this works quite nicely as far as breaking the gauge symmetry. But when one tries to incorporate some other known facts about the world, such in particular flavor, things get a bit complicated. And of course, there was a lot of work looking into these issues. But so the models, it becomes doesn't work as nicely as one would have hoped for. And one last comment that I want to make here, although is that naively, at least, the good agreement with electroweak precision tests seem to like a light Higgs degree of freedom as opposed to no Higgs, although and this is something that one can, it's not necessarily, and one can work around this. Now, there is a somewhat related idea, which is what I want to consider here, which is top condensation. And this arises from the observation that the top mass is fairly close to the electroweak scale. So one might ask, does the top maybe have anything to do with the electroweak breaking of the electroweak symmetry itself? Maybe is it possible that it's a condensation of tops that is leading to that breaking? And in fact, such a condensate has the right quantum numbers. It has the same quantum numbers as the standard model Higgs. Now, this idea, so I just want to review some facts. So this idea can be explored in some approximation in the context of an Ambujo and Alassinio model. And so namely, one assumes that there exists some four fermion interaction involving the top. So Q would be the top bottom doublet, and T right the top singlet. So this would arise from some new physics at some scale capital lambda, and I'm putting here some coupling G. If one considers the two-point correlator of composite operators take into account this four-fermion interaction, and so in a large n limit, that corresponds to resumming a series of bubble diagrams like this, which you can do, one finds that if this coupling is sufficiently large, that in fact this propagator exhibits massless Goldstone poles that are in the indication that that you are generating a condensate that is breaking a global symmetry, and on top of this Goldstone modes, one also finds an additional scalar, massive scalar mode, which one could identify as a Higgs, the central model Higgs. This would be a composite Higgs degree of freedom. Now, this idea has a couple of problems. One is that so there is this scale capital lambda, the scale of new physics, and there one predicts here the mass of this scalar pole, but also one generates a dynamical mass for the fermions, and those are related. So those depend on what is this scale lambda. If the scale is somewhat low, the top mass that you predict comes out somewhat high, too high for what we have observed. And on the other hand, if you increase this scale lambda, the top mass predicted is lower, comes closer to the actual top mass. But then you are generating a hierarchy between this scale and this and this dynamical scale, and that really corresponds to a fine tuning. Now there is a sort of a solution to this top mass issue coming out too large, which is called the top CISO, and I will return to that later on.
Aren't there really two fine tunings?
Two fine tunings?
There's one tuning to make the top mass small compared to lambda, and then impose that you get to get the right W bands. Then you need to take lambda to be very large.
So the
generically, the top mass would be for the lambda, right?
So yes, but also the condensate. So both the condensate and the dynamical top mass would be of order lambda. Now there is the fine tuning corresponds to choosing this coupling here very close to a certain critical value, and that corresponds to separating those two scales. That's the fine tuning. Once you do that, which is corresponds to imposing the gap equation, then you have the separation, and then you predict at the same time the condensate, so the W mass and the top mass, and so those two are tied together, and both would be in under that single tuning, they would come out both below lambda. So I think it's a single fine tuning as far as I know.
So when you have the seesaw, you still have to do that fine tuning.
Yes. So that's right. The seesaw really is just so once you have this fine tuning, let's you still have a mass which is maybe 400 GeV. The top seesaw allows you to lower that to 170. So that's an additional thing that is independent of the fine tuning to generate the separation between lambda and the condensation scale itself.
So I guess there is fine tuning, so the Higgs mass and the top mass.
Okay, so you can say so there is yeah so in the top seesaw, there is a new parameter which corresponds to a mixing of the top with an additional degree of freedom, and there will be one value of that parameter that gives you the correct mass. But I wouldn't quite call that a fine tuning. It's some correct choice of the parameter that gives the mass that we have seen.
There's a tuning
as opposed to here. So this is
the first tuning to make the top light compared to lambda.
That really is more like a cancellation between two terms. Of which are both large, but are very close to each other. That corresponds to this G being very close to some critical value. So that's what I would call a fine tuning. Two large terms that have independent origins, but they are very close to each other and cancel to high degree. The top C's I would describe just so there is some particular value of this mixing that gives you the value we have observed. Okay, so what So basically, that's I forgot to mention. So the other issue has to do that with. So here we are singling out the top for this. So we don't want, for instance, the rest of the quarks to condense, because then they would get masses which are also of the order of the electroweak scale, and we need them to be lighter. So there needs to be some way to distinguish between top from the bottom and the rest of the guys. Okay. Okay. So what I want to do is to sort of revisit these kind of the ideas within the context of a warped extra dimension, and so we can regard. I want to argue that there might be some additional things that can follow, which are kind of interesting. One can regard this warped extra dimension as a sort of a completion of this Nambu-Jonah-Lasinio scenario, in the sense that the four fermion interactions that are leading to the condensation are induced here, are arising from the exchange of Kaluza-Klein gluons. So when one integrates out those Kaluza-Klein gluons, that generates four fermion interactions, and those would play the role of the four fermion interaction in the Nambu-Jonah-Lasinio scenario. Also, as is well known by now, in this extra-dimensional scenario, one can distinguish flavor by playing with the fermion localization, the localization of the zero modes, and so that would be that would answer what makes the difference between the top versus the rest. Namely, the top is special because it's the one that will be the one that is closest to the infrared brain. The other guys are farther from the infrared brain, and that's why they couple less strongly and they don't condense. Also, I want to show that there are a couple of scales that are induced dynamically. And just to contrast, let me make a comment about a generic Randall syndrome scenario. And this is not meant to be a criticism of the generic Randall syndrome scenario, but just to contrast. So here, there usually one just assumes that the Higgs is localized at or near the infrared brain, which is, so you do that because that buys you the TV scale, okay? But in a sense, you are not quite explaining electroweak symmetry breaking in such a model, because you end up writing a potential for the Higgs, for instance, on the infrared brain, which is similar to what you do in the standard model. So you have to choose the mass term to have the correct sign to induce the electroweak symmetry breaking. So in that sense, you're putting it that part by hand. Although, of course, you buy the TV scale, which is why this model has attracted a lot of attention. Now, what I want to do here is to present a model where the electroweak is really broken dynamically. So it's not the thing is not put in by hand, so the theory sort of tells you that the vacuum is the one that breaks the electroweak symmetry. And at the same time, one gets, because we're in this Randall syndrome setup, the Planck electroweak scale hierarchy. Although here, when I say electroweak, I want to mean something a bit more precise than roughly TeV scale. I really want to mean the, say, 174 GeV of the Higgs VEV. And these two things are arising from the physics associated with top condensation and also radion stabilization. Now let me spend just one transparency talking about scales here, so that we have a clear picture of what is the scenario we have in mind, how it would work. So this is a warped extra dimension. There is in the microscopic Lagrangian, there is a single scale dimension, full scale in the problem, which is, so we can think of that as the curvature, the ABS curvature, which we can take of the same order as the five-dimensional Planck scale or the four-dimensional Planck scale. And that's pretty much the only dimensionful scale that you have to begin with. There's a number of dimensionless parameters. For instance, all these, what are usually called C parameters, which control the localization of fermions in the extra dimension. there is this dimensionless combination of the five-dimensional gauge coupling times square root of k, which essentially characterizes the strength of the interactions among kk gauge bosons. And the idea here would be that other scales are induced dynamically, in particular that, I will go over some details later, but so you, the situation is such that the tops condense basically through this Thom condensation mechanism, so that leads to the electroweak symmetry breaking somewhere here. But this physics is something that depends on the separation between the two brains, which I'm calling L here. So there is some radium field whose dev is equal to L. And what happens here is that there is a potential induced for the radium field. That potential has a minimum. And so that minimum is closely related to the breaking of the electroweak symmetry itself. So one is generating here a third scale, which I'm calling K tilde, which is just the warped down scale, K times this warp factor, okay? And this L, which is the size of L, will be set dynamically by just minimizing the corresponding potential. So the idea is that the radium will seek its potential and will adjust somewhere these two scales. And just to give you an idea of some numbers so that you know where we are, this generates a little hierarchy, which is not small. It's of order a couple hundred. And then, of course, one also has generated a larger hierarchy here, which is basically the Randall-Sundrom mechanism.
And
so,
is this little hierarchy going to be stable?
This little hierarchy, stable again. So
yeah.
Maybe stable against. So maybe when
it's
when
like
I
this. Positive Higgs. So
to get it with correctness to its mass. So we. Okay, maybe let me continue. Yeah, so let me defer that. You ask me again if I forget to say. So the upshot is that the model induces two ratios here. One is the Planck of the electroweak scale, which of course we have already measured. So this will just impose certain restrictions on the parameter space here of the model. But then there is a prediction which is we can take as the ratio between this scale, which I'm calling the KK scale, the Kaluza-Klein scale, over the electroweak scale, which is this essentially this factor of 200. Okay. So that's the idea. You start with a single scale, top condensation induces another scale, which is where the gauge symmetry is broken, and at the same time, because it induces a radium potential, you generate a third scale like that. Okay. So let me illustrate this mechanism by working in a toy model, and then most of the things I'm going to say here essentially translate into a more realistic scenario. So as you will see in the morning why this is just a toy model. So let me imagine that I have an SUN gauge theory with two flavors. In five dimensions, and I'm considering diagrams like this, where these are fermion zero modes exchanging some heavy gluon. So I'm going to think of this as a gluon, and in the realistic model, this would be really the KK excitations of the gluons we have seen. And so, as I was saying before, this generates a four fermion interaction here. That if this coupling, which I'm calling G sub C because that coupling depends on the localization of these fermions, is essentially an overlap integral of the corresponding wave functions of fermions and the gluon KK mode. If that thing is sufficiently large, then what we have learned through the study of this Nambu-Jonel-Asenio at low energies, we can expect that there will be some fermion bilinear condensation. Now, the point is that both this coupling as well as the mass of the exchange gluon, G sub C and NKK, depend on the separation between the two brains, L. And Therefore, the condensation itself will, through the dependence on these parameters, also induce a radiant potential. So one has, at the end, really, a potential that has to be minimized simultaneously for the condensate and the radiant field. And you get both at the same time. Now, one thing that's... So, in general, you will induce a potential. It need not be obvious that that potential should have a minimum. It could be a runaway direction. So that's one thing that I... So I want to argue that there is a minimum. Also that in that minimum, KL minimum is easily of order 10. We want something like 30 if we want to accommodate the Planck scale over the electroweak scale. And as I said in the previous transparency, there is some hierarchy where M Planck is large, MPK much smaller, and V electroweak even smaller. So let me assume that the two fermions that I have, which are five-dimensional fermions, that one of them has a left-handed zero mode and the second one has a right-handed zero mode. So I choose the boundary conditions such that this is the case. And we consider this diagram with a left-handed current and a right-handed current. Now, at low energies, so below the mass of this KK gluon, I iterate it out and I generate a four fermion operator like this with a coefficient suppressed by the MKK will be just the mass of this KK gluon and the product of these two couplings. And one can first rearrange this four fermion interaction in this form up to term suppressed by 1 over NC such that it looks like that. So like one has can look at the scalar channel. Now these couplings here, which is what I need them to be sufficiently large so that this interaction is strong and there is condensation, they are determined by an overlap integral since between the KK gluon and the fermions, since the KK gluon has a wave function which is localized close to the infrared range here at L, and so it will be this blue line, it's clear that if I have a fermion which is localized near the infrared brain, like the red one, then that interaction will be large. If it's localized on the other side, near the UV brain, that interaction will be small. In other words, it's really the fermions which are close to the infrared brain that have a chance to condense. They are the ones that interact more strongly with the KK gluons, and so that's where the condensation can happen. So I want to review, because it will be useful to understand how the radiant potential arises. One way in which one can understand this physics of condensation, which is actually equivalent to this resummation of bubble diagrams that I mentioned in the first transparency. And so the trick here is that, I'm considering here the theory at and below the scale of the exchanged KK gluon, MKK. One has the fermion zero modes, and one rewrites the four fermion interaction in terms of an auxiliary field H, writing a mass term and a Yukawa interaction between this auxiliary field H and the fermion. So this is just a rewriting of these guys. If one integrates out H by using the equations of motion, one just recovers this four fermion interaction. So at this point, this Higgs field is the auxiliary non-propagating. But if one now looks at what happens at scales lower than MKK, this Yukawa interaction induces a kinetic term for this field, so it becomes propagating. It also renormalizes its mass. It starts at the high scale at MKK, but at lower scales is something different, and also induces a quartic coupling. Now let me just to have something concrete to look at. Consider the case where I'm going to include only these Yukawa interactions. So these formulas, if one adds gauge interactions, like for the standard, the SU2 cross U1 interactions in a more complete model, they will give contributions to these formulas. But in this limit, one finds, for instance, that the Higgs mass parameter at low energies at the scale mu has this form. So there is a term starts at MKK here, and then this corresponds to a fermion loop, which is negative, and proportional to that coupling, which I'm calling G sub psi squared, the coupling of the four fermion interaction. So there is a negative contribution coming from that loop. And then the idea is that if this coupling is sufficiently large, then this second term can win over the first one and make the Higgs mass squared negative, and that would correspond to the condensation, so that the Higgs gets a bit. As I say, this is equivalent to the analysis of this, resuming these bubbles I mentioned before. Now, one this also allows us to identify what is in this approximation, what is the value of this critical coupling, which is in this case is 8 pi squared over n. Notice that numerically for n c equals 3, which will be the case I would like to consider, this is 26, which is not too far to the number 30 that corresponds to the e to the minus 30 is roughly the M Planck over TeV.
Shouldn't that be related to the QCD coupling at that scale?
Which scale?
The scale of the KK modes. So below the KK modes, it's 4D theory.
Yes.
And alpha S should run up and match on to that coupling.
So so this is the coupling between a massive KK gluon and fermions, which is larger than the coupling of the gluon to the fermion. So I will also look at the alpha strong to make sure that it matches correctly at this scale to what I need. But that so at the scale I'm talking about, that coupling is weak, whereas this one here has to be larger than this value. So so this one is coupling to KK gluons. So it's basically enhanced by a square root of KL, square root of a log, compared to the four-dimensional G-strong. Make sense? So one other thing that one sees here is that even if this second term is sufficiently large to win over this one, in general, if this is order one, one would find that the Higgs mass is negative, but it's of order MKK, and therefore the VEV would also be close to that scale. And this has to do with what I was saying at the beginning, the way that in this top condensation scenario, one generates a separation between the cutoff, which in this case is MKK, and the lower scale MH, is by making sure that the cancellation between these two terms is very precise, which corresponds to saying that this coupling Gibbs I squared is fairly close to the critical value. That's the fine tuning that is involved, that is necessary to obtain the separation of scales. Okay. Now, but here is where there might be a difference when this has been embedded in this extra dimensional structure, because this everything that I have in red here, this coupling and the KK scale, they are really radian dependent, and since the radian is a dynamical field, they are in a sense dynamical quantities, and then the idea will be that when you minimize the radian potential, the minimum is such that those two terms are actually canceling to a high precision, sufficient to generate this factor of 200, basically. So let me look at the radian potential. This is the contribution coming from the breaking of the electroweak symmetry. And there are other contributions that we'll consider in a couple of slides, but it's still interesting to look at, understand what happens if this is the dominant contribution. So one has generated a potential with a mass term for the Higgs and a quartic. These, the red quantities, as I said, they depend on the radian. The bars just mean that I have normalized canonically because I generated some kinetic term with some wave function, so I just renormalize so that this is canonically normalized. And it's useful to trivially rewrite this potential by completing the square. So define V as minus mh squared over 2 lambda, such that, and I add and subtract this constant, such that if there is condensation, namely if h dagger h is equal to V, this term vanishes and only this survives. I would have to find the radium vev, I would have to differentiate the potential with respect to L, equate that to zero. But if I do that, so that derivative will hit all the red quantities. But these terms here, you see, if this is vanishing, all of them will be proportional to h dagger h minus v squared, which is zero. So actually, the only term that matters for the radium potential is this second term. In other words, I can just write an effective radium potential, which actually looks like this. So there is some there is some critical separation between the two brains, such that if you are closer to that, your coupling in the four-fermion interaction is too weak to generate condensation. That means that H is equal to zero, and just looking in this form, there is no radium potential, so I have no potential on this side. But if I am more separated than that critical value, then the coupling is sufficiently strong. There is a condensation. H is different from zero. And then, it's, as I was saying here, only this second term contributes to the potential, and it has a form like this. So it's negative, that is minus sign here. It's zero here. It also goes to zero at infinity, essentially because it goes like mkk, and mkk, the radian dependence is essentially like e to the minus kl. So zero here, zero there, negative. There must be some minimum somewhere in between. Okay.
What do you call them fixed in this calculation? Are
you holding G5 fixed or G4? G5. I'm holding fixed the Lagrangian parameters. And then I have to make sure, I have to make sure that when I match to G4, which involves G4 squared is G5 squared over KL mean, I have to choose my G5 squared so that matches to the value of the alpha strong. But so here I'm keeping fixed the Lagrangian parameters. So I already mentioned that there is, the dependence on the radian in this complicated form comes from, this red quantities, this exponential in the KK mass. And there is, for the coupling, the reason I have, there is a critical is that coupling takes the following form. It has some leading order term, which is radian independent, although it depends on the localization of the fermions that are leading to the condensation, that are condensing. There is a subleading term in a 1 over KL expansion. I am looking for solutions where KL is large, order 30. And there are further subdominant terms. Now, I should say at this point that the details, so I will show in the following slides some plots with numbers. Those numbers come from an approximate, basically a trivial approximation. And what I really have here is a problem of strong dynamics. So as a caveat, I should say that I don't really know that this is what actually happens in this model, but I would argue that if the non-perturbative corrections are just order one corrections on top of the three-level quantities, that this kind of picture is what you expect. So I will be, in particular, I will be using that this function f1 bar f2 bar, which you can compute at three level. They turn out to be positive, so I wrote here a minus sign, which because I want to emphasize that is important. And they are also kind of large. Their value is set by this quantity g5 squared times k, which is essentially the coupling between a KK gluon and fermions. And when there is some additional numerical factor, this x1 is what relates the gluon KK mass to this warp-down curvature, which is something like 2.5. So if I use those three-level expressions, this is what I find. So the idea is, I will take the fermions to be sufficiently localized near the IR brain, so that this leading order term in the coupling is already above the critical value, which say 8 pi squared over nc. Okay, so in this, if we look at this plot, what I have in the horizontal axis is basically so this is F1 bar is this combination. So here I'm sort of plotting different microscopic Lagrangians with different values for F1 bar compared to Gc squared. So if I have that situation, if I am somewhere here, so this leading order term is already supercritical. Now here I am subtracting something because I said that F2 bar is positive. And so what happens is that the net coupling here becomes closer to the critical value than this input value. So for each choice of parameters, say here, one goes and minimizes the potential. The point here in this curve would correspond to some non-zero condensate and at the same time some radian size. And there is one of those points, which is this one, which has the correct value of 174 GeV for V electroweak. Here I'm assuming that K is some high scale like this. And then I can read off what is the corresponding KL min, which is 30. Now 30, so e to the minus 30 does not bring you down all the way from the Planck scale to the 100 GeV scale. It will require more like e to the minus 36 or something like that. This brings you down only like to somewhere in between, which is actually like a 35 TeV. And so that's the origin of this factor of 200 that I was mentioning at the beginning. So one finds that essentially if I take some input parameter, some about 10% above the critical value, then I compute the condensate, and I find that there is a hierarchical separation between the condensate and the cutoff MKK, and that separation is more than this 10%, and the reason is essentially because this full quantity has been brought very close to the critical value, and that's what generates a separation. So the idea here would be that the reason why there was this cancellation that I mentioned before in the Higgs mass parameter, which required g sub psi squared to be very close to the critical value, is not because I chose some parameters in the Lagrangian to be very close to that value, but because there was a term there that is dynamically adjusted in such a way that brings this whole thing very close to that. So that's basically what is happening here.
How sensitive is it to the 10%? If I
chose
5%, would it still work?
So what? Yeah, so this, if you change this here, what happens is that, so if you keep fixed this high scale, for instance, what you find is that this is not 174, but something completely different, and it's exponentially sensitive. So you can ask, so it's something similar to generating the QCD scale through dimensional transmutation from a high scale. So there is some exponential sensitivity to the parameter you are varying. One thing that we looked at to try to get an idea for what is the tuning involved was to compare the sensitivity around this to some typical sensitivity at different points. And so that came out to be something like 10%. So that's really the basis for the... So when I say that there is some 10% tuning, that really comes from that kind of argument. But so yes, your question is that yes, there is an exponential sensitivity, but generically, so you see all these KL mean is easily of order 10 or more. So the general prediction is that there is and you're generating hierarchies. Okay. Okay. So let me briefly mention there are actually other contributions to the potential that are not related to electroweak symmetry breaking, and that are not necessarily small. This have to do with, for instance, there are Casimir-like contributions, which are calculable. And then there are also non-calculable contributions that look like this, which have to do with essentially a mismatch between the infrared brain tension and these magical values of the original Randazzo scenario that kill the radiant potential. Now, something which is interesting, though, is that even though these are larger, even so, if I still put these together with the radiant potential, there is still a minimum, and that minimum is arising because of this apparently subleading effect coming from the condensation. The mechanism is still buying you the fact that there is a minimum. One second comment that I would like to make here is that actually these contributions here, which are at one loop, they have the property that they are determined by the content, the field content of your theory, and they do not depend on how those fields interact, what are the interactions of those fields. And so it is actually relatively easy to kill this, the leading order effects here, if you have, for instance, new degrees of freedom which have opposite statistics, for instance, something similar to supersymmetry, except that this only requires that a matching of degrees of freedom. So there is it's not necessarily that to say anything about the interactions of these things. So the bottom line is that, so maybe I can go in more detail about this later if people are interested, but the bottom line is that one can still, even including effects like this, one can still expect that there is some little hierarchy that could be still in the tens of TeV. So one has this kind of interesting situation where one is generating from some dynamical mechanism some separation between the two scales, some apparently tuned cancellation between two terms, but that cancellation arising as a result of the fact of those terms depending on the dynamical field that wants them to cancel.
But aren't there further corrections to the Higgs mass?
So for instance, when you add the SU2 cross U1 interactions, they will give contributions to the Higgs mass, and so there will be some. So what I expect is there will be some new value of the critical value of the critical coupling, such that the sum of all those things, even higher loop orders, cancel, and all of those things will depend on the radiant potential, on the radiant. Sorry. So I guess this is one of those things that let me see how strong a statement I can make. So because those are weak couplings, what I would expect is that those shift things only a little. That's what I would say about those couplings. So the details I expect will change, but for the SU2 cross U1 couplings, I think that would be a small effect. Okay, so let me, just in the last 10 minutes, move on to an application of this to the standard model. And so actually, I did mention before that when you condense, you also produce a dynamical mass for the quarks. That mass depends on what's the cutoff. If you take a cutoff, like a 35 TeV from the previous analysis, and work out what's the dynamical mass, it comes out to be something like 400 GeV. So this clearly, we cannot directly identify these quarks with the top. This is too much. But so this part is actually not difficult to address. So there are actually two possibilities. I mentioned one that was a path taken by Gustavo Burman and Leandro Darroll, which is to rather think of this fermion of 400 GeV as a fourth generation fermion. The path I want to take here is this top season that I mentioned, which is basically to it's a scenario where the top is playing a role in condensation, but it's not the complete story. It's only partially playing a role in the condensation, and that gives an additional parameter that allows you to go from this 400 GeV scale down to 170 GeV. And, well, in fact, when one does the implementation of the top season, this five-dimensional framework, it fits kind of nicely, although those are details that I will skip here. So the idea of a more realistic scenario would be that you promote the standard model field content to a five-dimensional world background, except that you will not include a fundamental Higgs. The idea is that there will be a Higgs generated, but as a bound state of fermions. And to implement the top CISO, one adds one new five-dimensional quark, which has the same quantum numbers as the right-handed top. But this will have no zero mode. So at low energies, one chooses the boundary conditions to reproduce the standard model. You want anomaly-free and so on. But this additional 5D quark can be easily light compared to the KK scale if one gives it minus plus boundary conditions such that there is no zero mode. And so this part, so this addition here is basically to implement the top C. So it's just has nothing to do with the condensation itself. It's a way of lowering the dynamical quark mass from 400 GeV to something less. This new quark will mix with the top quark, but this mixing is essentially fixed by the top mass. Okay, so as I was saying before, so there is some mixing parameter, and one choice of that leads to the mtop with one. So that's not a free parameter in the model. Really, the only new parameter is the mass of this vector-like quark, and it turns out that, I will mention in the next slide, that electroweak precision tests set a preferred window for this mass. Also, a quick comment here, and I can elaborate on that if people are interested. One can accommodate light fermion masses without a problem, and basically it's a story similar to the standard story in Randall's syndrome with fermion localization, although here there is no Higgs. And there is one additional light degree of freedom, which is that there is a radium which is light, in fact something around 1 GeV. So let me just go over a couple of things here. One is the issue of the electroweak precision constraints. So together with this 400 GeV quark mass and what generates, one also gets a relatively heavy composite Higgs of about 500 GeV. And as we know, that generates a negative contribution to the T parameter in particular. But because of the presence of this new vector-like quark that was necessary to implement the top CISO, there is an additional contribution, which is positive to the T parameter, from essentially a loop of those guys that mix with the top. And basically, one can compensate the two of them, and that's what ends up preferring a window for the mass of this new quark. So in particular, one finds that there is both a lower and an upper limit for that mass. It cannot be too low, because otherwise its contribution to T would be too large, would overshoot this negative value. It cannot be too heavy, because then it cannot compensate. So there is some window which is somewhere around 2 TeV. Okay, so that's one of the ingredients that one has. Now, the other thing I want to mention is the radion. The radion, so there is one important quantity that characterizes the physics of the radion, which is so this quantity, the radion decay constant, which is related to. So actually, the M5 cubed over K is just the four-dimensional Planck scale. So it's directly related to the Planck scale. And the interactions of the radion are actually suppressed by this, by the warped down scale F. And because, remember that I have a relatively large KK mass, which is 35 TeV, actually this scale comes out to be somewhat larger, something like 100 or 200 TeV. So that means that this radion, which has coupling suppressed by that large scale, is weakly coupled.
There is, why is that F a free parameter?
It's not free. This is completely fixed. The on, I, actually,
what,
so
what fixes it?
Where my radio stabilization fixes this this VEV. So I
no, but
I
F, what fixes that?
Ah, how do you find this? Well, so the radion, so you parameterize the ABS metric, so put the radion degree of freedom there, and so from the five-dimensional Einstein-Hilbert action, where you have the M5 there, so you derive from there what is the low-energy Lagrangian for the radion, and so that's where this scale comes from. So it's related to M5 and K just because the radion comes from degrees of freedom in the five-dimensional metric.
This is the four-dimensional.
Well, yeah, so this is what comes, yes.
So aren't you allowed to add arbitrary couplings on the brains?
Like
exactly,
okay.
That coupling?
Yeah, yes, probably you could add localized Ricci scalars. Okay, I have to say, it could be. But I'm still, okay. So here, I guess the spirit is that one has, one is starting with a theory with a single scale. So even if, So M5 and K are of the same order. So if you assume that the scale entering those brain localized terms is also of that order, I probably wouldn't expect that the fact that this is something like 100 TeV would change. So the work factor, as I say, is fixed by the radion stabilization, and then F might have a different expression from this. But okay, yeah. So there might be numerical factors, which I don't know exactly how they will enter. But probably I would expect that it's still a large scale, and therefore the radion is comes out weakly coupled. But okay, we'll have to look into that. Okay, let me. Well, there is some mixing with the Higgs, but because this scale is large F, the warp down F, that mixing is actually small and. Here it was just plot. Let me go to the next slide. So it turns out also that the radial mass M phi and this radial decay constant are related in this model. So this numerator is essentially fixed. For instance, I can start playing with changing K and. What happens is that, so what you find is that L responds in turn, adjusts itself again, such that the KK scale remains more or less fixed at 35 TeV. Okay? So, but basically what, the important point here is that because this scale is large, the radion mass is small. And for F for the 100 TeV, that mass would be about 1 GeV. So you can ask, how could we see this? It's not easy because it's a very weakly coupled field. But it turns out that probably one can look into this, for instance, in BDKs. So there are two types of effect. There is a one-loop effect where a diagram like this, where the radion, which couples proportional to mass, is emitted from a W line here. And so this is a relatively model-independent process. But it has also a small, it corresponds to a small branching ratio of BDK over 10 to the minus 5, there is another kind of process which is a bit more model dependent that depends a bit of, on how you are implementing the flavor structure into this model. But basically, when you are imagining that the different masses arise from different localizations of the profiles in the extra dimension, and then you look how those fermions couple to the radiant field, those couplings are not quite aligned with the fermion masses, and therefore when you go to the mass eigenstate base, the fermion mass eigenbases, you can generate off-diagonal entries at free level, say joining transitions B2S, and that can give a larger branching fraction. So one could so this is large enough that one could try to look for these types of decays. Now, what you look for will depend on how the radium field decays, and that in turn depends on what is its mass. And what we expected is that it's somewhere around a few. So we expect it to be maybe below 4 GeV, could be 1 GeV, could be somewhat less. If it's something like in this scale, one finds that it decays mostly into hadrons. So that would be, and it's not an easy kind of channel, but one handle that one has is that actually this radium field is somewhat long-lived, and for these scales, it would have a decay length of about almost a millimeter. So one could look for displaced vertices. So depending on what's the precise mass, one can either look for those displaced vertices, or for instance, if this is a lower mass, sufficiently low that the hadronic channels are closed, so if it decays into muons, then one can impose actually strong constraints on this scenario because those are clean channels. But so basically, this one way so one prediction of this scenario is a light radion, which is very weakly coupled, but one might look for it in BDKs, looking for displaced vertices. So let me conclude. So I have described here how various scales might be linked dynamically. So let me organize them in this form. The electroweak scale I'm thinking of as arising from top condensation physics. The weakness of the gravitational interactions is obtained at the Randall syndrome. And the third scale, the Kaluza-Klein scale, is obtained from radiant stabilization. Now, these three things really happen at the same time, but just want to assign blame in this form just to organize. Also, another comment which I want to make is that this localization of fermions in the extra dimension is playing some sort of unifying principle. So, for instance, to get the condensation, I had to localize the corresponding fermions, the tops, close to the infrared brain. And therefore, I can think of the composite Higgs, which is a bound state of those, as being, in a sense, being close to the infrared brain. So and that's why I'm getting at the end a condensation scale which is low. I'm using the work factor also. Also, as I mentioned, although I didn't give details, one can play the game where the fermion mass hierarchies and also some suppression of flavor-changing neutral currents arises from these localization effects. So the same localization is giving you the condensation, the flavor structure, and also the Randall syndrome, the weakness of gravitational interactions. Now, the signatures that I described at the end would be a relatively heavy Higgs of about 500 GeV, which should suggest some underlying strong coupling. An additional vector-like quark, which mixes with the top and has a mass of about 2 TeV. I didn't mention the transparency, but actually the range where one expects this quark might be doable at the LHC, although it will require a large luminosity. So this you would look for single production of this vector-like quark. It mixes with the top, and so you can look for single production. There is this light radium, which might be observable in B-physics. And then beyond that, there is nothing else up to the very high scale, which is, say, 35 TeV, which unfortunately is where this magic of the cancellation is supposed to be happening. And that, of course, will be beyond the LHC. Thank you. Then you find the quadratic divergences that we always find, cut off at 35 TeV. And so you would say, from a low-energy point of view, it looks like there is the usual fine-tuning. And here we're saying, okay, yes, it looks like that, but the reason this is happening is that, if I go to the, that computation would give something like, so there will be more terms, but you would find this would be the contribution from the top loop, okay? And what you would have to conclude from low energy is that is being cancelled against some bare mass parameter. From low energy point of view, there seems to be no reason for that. And so that's what is I find surprising here, is that so the mechanism here is that the reason would be that these quantities.
So that's the top loop, and let's say we tune that away. Now there's the gauge bosons. And
okay, the idea is that so what I should do is include all the other terms here, write the radium potential and minimize. And so I haven't shown this, but this term is not particularly special compared to others. So the radium term could respond to the effects of all those things. Okay, so.
So to say in dynamics, like to drive your question to be close to the critical value. Is there a good way of the intuition why it should happen? If it's a super critical by a lot, obviously there's no hierarchy.
Yes. So intuitive. I'm afraid I don't have a very good answer to that. I mean, okay.
And there is no symmetry. Right?
There is no symmetry. There is so this. So the claim here would be that there are no new degrees of freedom that are leading to cancellations, as in the usual way. It's just a.
Could you remind me F1 and F2?
F1, okay, so F1 and F2, I didn't give you the expressions, but these are some. Basically, they arise from computing the overlap integral between the fermions and KK gluon, okay? I can show you the expression. I can show the expressions for these things. The property that I'm using here is that they are both positive. The first thing, they have a different dependence on C1 and C2.
Mm-hmm. What are they?
What are they physically?
You have two different things. You say it's overlapping the group.
Okay, this whole thing is that integral of three-way functions in an expansion in powers of 1 over KL. Right. So there is a leading order term which is KL independent, that coefficient I call F1 bar. Mm-hmm. And there is the first correction to that I call F2. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the definition of this F1 and F2. And basically, so the idea is that as KL moves here, this starts subtracting. It can, and maybe if it subtracts too much, then you are subcritical, So in this potential like that I drew there, like that, that you would be somewhere here. So you're at higher energy there. Instead, you want to be here. You want to be somewhat supercritical. Mm-hmm. But so, and you can see here the tendency of this to bring the whole thing closer to criticality. Now, why is it as close as to generate the particular hierarchy I'm generating? So that might depend on some details. I have expressions that depend only on this F1 bar and F2 bar, so not necessarily on the detailed expressions, but just formulas in terms of this. So one can I think even here I...
What are the values of C1 and C2?
They are something like... one of them is like so negative means close to the infrared brain, -2/3 and -1/2. Something, one of them is something like that. So they are fairly localized towards the infrared brain. So those the couplings of those zero mode fermions to the KK gluon are actually larger than couplings, for instance, of the KK fermions to KK gluons. They are sufficiently localized there.
-1/2 and -2/3.
Yeah. So if I just okay,
your
F1
is 10% above, for
your
suppose
it's 100% above crystal,
then you don't have this error,
right?
Or
you still have this error. So if you are somewhere here, sorry, we don't have it here, but so you would find, yeah, you reduce all the scales. You still, have some in this point something of order 10.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what is the little hierarchy in that case. So yes, there is some amplification. The idea is that I have to put in something close, but then I'm getting an amplification due to this effect. So I'm saying that the radiant stabilization is buying you more than what you put in.
Okay. For 10%, well, forget about F2, if just 10%, we know the F2 part hierarchy we get between KK and then Higgs.
You mean if I didn't have this term here?
Yes.
And because this term is essential because it's
But I just say that you should have come and
okay.
With
so,
the
yes. So it's
10% supercritical quantum with the
So you have MH squared is like MKK squared 1 minus G psi squared over
G
beta squared.
10%
so you're saying
also it'll be just 10% mass squared. So a factor 3.
Right. And instead I'm getting
so I have
here some without the squares, this is what I get. So I said before that so GC squared is something like, okay, is this 8 pi squared over n, which is like 26. I'm saying that F1 bar minus GC squared over GC squared is about 10%. So that means that, let me write. So what I'm doing there is I'm writing this, so this F1 bar minus GC squared is, since this is let's say 30, 10% of that is something like 2 to 3. So basically we see that here, so this F1 bar minus GC squared cancels these two roughly, and I get a 1 over GC squared and an additional 1 over square root of that. Both F2 and F1 are actually, so the other observation is that F1 is of the same order as F2. So all of these are order GC squared. So what I'm getting at the end is like in terms of squares, V squared is MKK squared, and I get, so it's 1 over GC squared cubed is something like, actually it looks like a three loop factor using this.
So this is basically what the factor of 200 squared that I'm getting. So it seems to be buying you quite a bit. Put the top port just on the grid brain. What happens?
So naively, you are well above criticality. So you expect that there is no separation between the two scales. So I guess you could say there will be condensation, but there is no separation between the scales.
How do we know?
That you are at supercritical.
Yeah, obviously that involved choosing G5.
No, that
like you chose G5 root K is 5.08. So
that's right. So that is
so
what
G5 be something different.
Well, if you live in a different world where you don't want to get the correct alpha strong, yes, but. So G5 is essentially, and you have to choose the correct value so that the four-dimensional coupling at that scale is what it should be. So in the model, essentially, G5 is being fixed by that requirement.
So since alpha s depends on L min, don't all the directions with alpha s is in them contribute to the radial?
Yes, so that falls in the category of so there are loop corrections. So that's why I emphasize that this is a three-level story, and there is a non-perturbative physics that I don't know exactly what happens. But one experiment I did just to see how things could change is, let's say that so I don't have really access to the non-perturbative expressions for this F1 bar and F2 bar, but let's say that you were able to compute those loop corrections, and these things change by order one. So, for instance, I explore what happens if I just multiply this by factors of 2 or 1/2, and see and just reanalyze this thing to get an idea. And so, if I do this by factors 1/2, I find that the KK scale can be anywhere from I think it was 25 PV, even up to maybe 50, close to 50 PV. So there is amount.
If I change F1 bar by factors of 2, then
yes. But so what?
In the plot over here.
So.
If I change F1 bar by factors of 2, I go.
Yes. Yes. No. So, but
way,
so.
Way.
I agree, but that's not that. So
that
you want to. So you okay? You do. F1, which depends on C1 and C2, you just change, say, for 2 times that. So you're right, then you will be somewhere here. That means that you are predicting the wrong electroweak scale. So you have to.
Way out.
Or way out, yeah. So, okay. But that means, so you are predicting the wrong Planck electroweak scale hierarchy. So what I'm comparing are keeping those fixed, which means that I localize the fermions again to. So that I. Reproduce the Planck over 100 GeV ratio. Then, so for fixed, so the statement is that for fixed, both alpha S, four dimensional, and M Planck, four dimensional M Planck over V electroweak, then that's what it gives me to this range. So really you reaccommodated the dependencies C1 and C2. So there will be some so you have that those knobs, right? How you localize the fermions. So I'm saying, imagine that you were able to compute these functions non-perturbatively, and they come out to be a factor of 2 larger than these three-level things. The C-dependence might be different from the three-level one. I will, just to get an idea, assume that it's the same C-dependence. So I just readjust the Cs so that I accommodate what I know about, and then I ask how these changes. So that's the statement I'm making.
So does that explain the factor of 100 between we do in C?
In C? In the... So you're saying, being precisely here, or... So I'm moving this in this axis by controlling the localization of the fermions. So I have to choose some particular values to be precisely here. But once I do that, so that's really just so that this has the value I know about. Then I just go and read this factor of 30, and I read the factor of 200. But I would say that this choice is really fixed by reproducing the correct weak scale.
Sometimes you put in the Planck sphere and the weak sphere, and then you predict this MKK.
Yes, so.
So what?
Yeah, and that's so
what you do.
That's what I
use M Planck and M weak to predict MKK, then you find this.
That's right. So I would say, yes. So I fix M Planck over V because I know what it is, right? But in principle, that's also fixed by... So if I give you the microscopic Lagrangian, then you compute what is V-electroweak and what is MKK. You have 2 predictions in principle. In general, one of those will disagree with the world we live in. So we have to take a different Lagrangian until we find the one that has M Planck and V-electroweak what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see what is MKK, so that's the one you call the prediction.
So how precise you predict the mass of the peaks in
So there is some uncertainty on what is the actual scale here, the scale of scale. So this 500G, we really have some slides here. So there is some infrared quasi-fixed point that, so at the end, the uncertainties are less than what you would guess. So this will be a plot for the to determine the Higgs mass, and on this side, when we use this corresponds to the cutoff of 35 TeV. This corresponds to some RG improvement. One is taking into account the SU2 couplings and also the quartic. And so one can, so if you fixed this cutoff here, then there is a bit of an uncertainty as to what is the precise value of the starting point here, but it turns out that doesn't matter too much. So these low energy values are relatively constant. So I think that fixing MKK, it was like 500 plus or minus 25 GeV or something like that. I don't know exactly. So when you change from 35 to 50 or 25, it will be somewhat different, but I don't... But I would guess it's below between 500 and 600 GeV. So it's not a huge variation.
So when you put in more loop corrections to the Higgs mass, they adjust the Cs, right?
Create just the Cs.
If you put in additional loop corrections, mm-hmm. the Higgs mass calculation, that means there's a different value of C required to get the weak scale to come out right.
Yes. Yeah, so these values of C equals minus 2/3 or minus 1/2, they are in this approximation. I expect that they could shift somewhat. And I can get an idea. So yeah, doing this exercise, for instance, I had to get gels, and they were somewhere. I don't remember, but they were around that region, negative, fairly negative.